Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Talmudic Stove, was written by Erwin Gonshak. It is one of a series of programs dramatizing the trials of man. I slowly turn the pages of the Talmud. What is the law of a ball, a shoemaker's last, an amulet, a leather bag containing pearls, a small weight? And the scoffer behind me is unimpressed. He tells me he is concerned with the all-consuming issues of our time, the black headlines that flash across our front pages. And he laughs when I speak of the Achnai stove. But I turn around and stare coldly at him and retort, Hold your laughter, friend. Listen a moment to the arguments of the rabbis about this Talmudic stove. Let your imagination wander with mine back through the centuries, and I assure you that you will hear more than a colloquy on a pottery stove. For the rabbis had a way of probing beneath the surface of all that their hearts and minds wondered about, of seeing a whole world mirrored in a drop of water.
Achnai, this is your stove?
Yes, Sir Rabbi Joshua.
And you do not deny that it was exposed to uncleanliness?
No, Rabbi Joshua, I do not deny that.
And you know that when a stove is exposed to uncleanliness, according to biblical law, it is not to be used again, it is to be broken?
Exactly, Rabbi Joshua. That is what I did with the stove. I broke it into pieces.
And then, Achnai?
Well, I took the broken pieces, put sand between them, and plastered them over with a layer of cement.
And afterwards, you used the stove again?
Oh, yes. I did use it again.
And who told you that this was proper to do?
Rabbi Eliezer.
Of course I told Achnai to use the stove again. It is no longer a whole stove, and therefore not subject to regulations concerning whole stoves.
But Eliezer, the Holy One, blessed be he, is concerned above all with what is in a man's heart. Achnai believed the stove to be whole again, and still he used it, even though he was aware that it was unclean.
No, I disagree. My reasoning is clear and simple. I look at the stove. It is cut into small tiles, and therefore it is a broken vessel and can be used again. I am concerned with the facts at hand, not intentions.
I'm about to turn the page to continue the rabbinical disputations, but my friend the scoffer demurs. I don't care one hoot about stoves, clean or unclean, broken or unbroken, he objects. Perhaps one day it was important and received the attention of the rabbis, but it is not part of my age. All right, I answer. Will you stay to see a miracle? He smiles. Miracles are also not part of my age, he says. But for a miracle, I'll stay.
Rabban Gamaliel, may I please have the attention of the Sanhedrin of Yavne?
For what purpose, Eliezer?
We have been deliberating many hours concerning Achnai's stove. I believe I can end these hearings very quickly with one stroke and to everyone's satisfaction.
And how do you propose to do that?
By performing a miracle. Yes, yes, I can perform miracles. Do you see that carob tree over there? It will bear witness to my interpretation of the law. The tree will uproot itself, rise in the air, fly a distance of 400 yards and then replant itself.
That would indeed be a singular event.
And certainly such a miracle would prove the merits of my arguments concerning Achnai's stove.
But I cannot speak for the assembled. But if you must, go on with your miracle.
I touch the carob tree thusly, and watch.
Look! For my stove, the carob tree floats in the air.
And it shall come down again.
Replanted, trembling in the soil.
I must say, Eliezer, that was an extraordinary feat.
Now shall we vote on the cleanliness or uncleanliness of Achnai's stove?
Does anyone think further discussion is needed?
Rabban Gamaliel, what additional discussion could be required? You saw the carob tree.
For my stove, trees uproot themselves.
Well then, we shall proceed to the vote.
By all means, by all means.
All those in favor of Eliezer's position signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay!
Eliezer, your ruling has been defeated. The stove of Achnai is declared unclean by the Sanhedrin of Yavna.
This is impossible. Impossible.
The carob tree for my stove.
You all saw it.
We may not admit the testimony of a carob tree. Shall the carob tree discourse to us regarding the halacha? Will the carob tree teach us the law?
No, Eliezer. This or that variation in the established order of nature, effected at your bidding, proves nothing for the soundness of your argument.
All right. I thought it would be like this. I see it is necessary for this group to be shown something more potent than miracles.
Eliezer, the vote has been taken. Accept the decision of your colleagues.
Rabban Gamaliel, it is true that the discussion can be reopened and a new vote taken?
Yes, if you have new arguments or new evidence.
I do.
And what is that?
A most powerful affirmation of my point of view concerning Achnai's stove.
Yes?
A celestial voice. Yes, my colleagues. A celestial voice will affirm the rightness of my decision. Listen now. Listen.
I hear. The celestial voice says Rabbi Eliezer is right.
Now, Rabban Gamaliel, would this be considered new evidence?
First trees fly from my stove, and now the heavens acclaim it.
Yes, Eliezer. I would think you have produced new evidence.
Then may I suggest that we have another vote?
All right. We shall have another vote.
Good. Let us be on with it.
My stove. A celestial voice.
Remember, Achnai, it was for my decision that the heavens interceded.
Your attention, please. All those in favor of Eliezer's opinion on Achnai's stove, signify by answering aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
Nay.
The original ruling stands.
A voice from above.
Eliezer, we must ignore the celestial voice which has been declared for you. For the Torah, once having been given to mankind, remains for the opinion of the majority to decide on its interpretation and application.
And then, my skeptical friend, legend has it that when one of the rabbis afterwards met Elijah and asked him what they thought in heaven of the audacity of his colleagues to dare to oppose a celestial voice, the prophet answered, God rejoiced and said, my children have conquered me. But to return, it appears that Rabbi Eliezer is still not satisfied, and he grumbles in his seat, the same way you do who look over my shoulder. You have seen your miracle, and now you're ready to be off. Well, stay a moment, I say. There is more to this story of a Talmudic stove than a few miracles. Listen.
Wait.
What is it now, Eliezer?
I have more to say on the issue.
Eliezer, we have been very patient with you. We have seen your miracles. We have listened to your celestial voices. We have even recast the vote. And the majority has finally decided.
Precisely what I wish to discuss further.
And that is?
The majority. This treasured majority. I ask, what is it?
It is composed of your colleagues, selected by the Jewish community.
May I ask this majority a few questions?
As you wish, Eliezer.
Joshua, would you please come forth?
Of course, Eliezer.
Joshua, would you call yourself a representative member of the Sanhedrin of Yavne?
Yes, I think so.
In many ways?
Well, yes, in many ways.
What is your profession?
You know what my trade is.
Say it, Joshua. Are you ashamed of it?
I am a smith, a worker in metals.
What about the rest of our colleagues?
Well, some are tradesmen, carpenters, tent makers, shepherds.
Enough. You have made my point. Now, if I may, I should like to speak of my profession. I am a landowner with hundreds of acres of land, plantations of flax, wine, date, palm, and olive trees, 45 servants, storehouses of precious goods and food.
Eliezer, I dislike interrupting you. But do we have to listen to a catalogue of your wealth?
Responsibilities, that is the word to be used.
Have it your way. But exactly what is your point?
This. With all my great responsibilities, why should my vote be counted the same as the others?
Shame. A man with plantations of flax, wine, date, palm, and olive trees, and only one vote. Shame.
But we are all children of God, made in his likeness. All equally precious to him.
Still, God has shown special favor on me, has given me additional responsibilities. Shouldn't there be an equivalent compensation for me in the voting?
Eliezer, would you like two votes?
Two votes? Simpleton, is that justice to give me two votes? What good would two votes do me?
Then you would have twice as many as I have.
With my responsibilities, I should have 1,000 more votes than you.
Would you like the council to put that to the vote?
Oh, put it to the vote. Put it to the vote.
Achnai, I'm afraid we waste our time with these rabbis when we ask for votes.
All in favor of Eliezer getting 1,000 votes in the Sanhedrin, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay!
I'm afraid, Eliezer, that you'll have to remain satisfied with your one vote. The next proposition that we will discuss...
I am not finished with the last proposition, Rabban Gamaliel.
1,000 apologies. We thought you were.
I see there are certain groups here who wish to see me humiliated because of my position, my responsibilities in the community. There is no point in denying it. I should like to say a few more words about your majority, Rabban Gamaliel.
We do not limit your speech.
Now, each rabbi has one vote. And you insist that is fair?
Unfair, unfair.
Achnai says unfair. Rabban Gamaliel, what have you been heard to say of my erudition, of my knowledge of Torah?
Eliezer is like a cemented cistern that doesn't lose a drop.
Good, good.
And Joshua, what have you said of me?
Eliezer is more precious to Israel than even God's gift of rain.
Agreed, agreed.
And what has our illustrious teacher, Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai, said of me?
He proclaimed you greater than all the other scholars in Israel combined.
True, true.
And still, my colleagues, to such a man you give only one vote?
Shame, shame.
But Eliezer, isn't it written in Exodus, after the majority must one incline?
Joshua, I don't need you to quote scripture to me. If all the reeds were pens, and all the seas were ink, and the heavens and earth were parchment, and all mankind were scribes, it would still be impossible to record all the Torah I know.
Is it possible, Eliezer, that you have overlooked the saying, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord?
No, I am not. And that is why I abide by the synagogue prayer. Purify our hearts that we serve thee in truth. The fact that my knowledge of Torah is extensive is not an abomination. It is the simple truth. For example, at this moment there are 300 laws I can quote and explain concerning the growing of cucumbers.
Yes, 300. I have heard, Rabbi Eliezer, 300.
I shall count as he relates them.
The first one...
We do not doubt your ability, Eliezer. It is not necessary for you to recite them.
And still you expect me, with all my knowledge of Torah, to accept the decision of the Sanhedrin of Yavne simply because a majority is against me?
We do.
Never, never.
No, never.
That is your prerogative. Nevertheless, we will record your minority dissent. And perhaps one day you will be able to convince us that it should become the majority point of view.
You cannot arrive at truth by majority rule.
There is a legend which says that Moses pleaded with the Lord, master of the universe, "Reveal unto me the final truth in each problem of doctrine and law." To which the Lord replied, "There are no pre-existent final truths in doctrine or law. The truth is the considered judgment of the majority of authoritative interpreters in every generation."
You cite a legend. I can cite from the holy text itself. "Ye shall not add unto the word which I command you, nor shall ye take anything from it."
You have quoted correctly, Rabbi Eliezer.
Yet I have seen the Sanhedrin of Yavne completely disregard this edict of the Lord time and time again. Tell me, does the vote on Achnai's stove still stand?
It does.
Then I announce before all that I will never accept your decision.
We respect your right to believe so.
And I expect to go one step further.
What is that?
I feel your decisions are a mockery to God's will and his words. I am the one who has the erudition. I am the one who has performed miracles. I am the one who had the heavenly voice speak in my behalf. I am the one with the land and the wealth, and therefore the responsibilities they entail. Therefore, I will not obey this decision about Achnai's stove or the others, and I will urge the populace to do likewise.
Eliezer, I beg you to reconsider your action. Disagree with us as much as your conscience sees fit, but please, for the good of Israel, our community, abide by the decision of the majority. Please, enter in peace and go out in peace.
That is impossible, Joshua. I did enter in peace. But your actions make it necessary for me to leave in a spirit of battle.
Rabban Gamaliel, must we act against our own colleague?
For the time being, we will wait.
Maybe his wrath will abate shortly.
So far, it has only been words. We would only take action against our colleague if he commits deeds.
So you see, my friend, what started out as a minor discussion about a stove has taken a more serious turn, which even you, with your modern mind and sophisticated interests, can recognize, hmm? Good. You'll stay a moment longer. The pages of the Talmud turn, and we follow Rabbi Eliezer on his mission of vindication.
My fellow countrymen! I tell you that the truth cannot be established by majority vote. Who are these soft-minded, ill-informed, self-seeking teachers who set themselves up as your masters? Do not let the Sanhedrin of Yavne determine your ways. Refuse to accept their decrees. They are the cause of Israel's decline.
My colleagues, we have been patient and understanding too long with Eliezer. Now we must face our responsibilities. Please tell Eliezer to come in.
Has the vote taken place?
Shortly.
I suppose the necessary majority will be obtained.
We shall see.
It is not difficult to obtain majorities these days.
You have the right, Eliezer, to obtain a majority for your cause. But until your view becomes the majority, The majority's view must be respected.
The majority is not my God.
It is not ours either. But on Earth, man must govern himself as best he can.
Then it is recorded that the rabbis consulted again among themselves as to what was to be done. Rabbi Akiba, the disciple of Eliezer, was sent to deliver the court's decision to him.
My master, it appears to me that your colleagues keep aloof from you.
I understand your words, Akiba. I am to be cut off from the community of scholars. All right. So be it.
Rabbi, what is wrong? There are tears in your eyes.
I must dispatch a message to my colleagues in Yavne and tell them concerning their deliberations. But what can I tell them now?
Yes, Rabbi.
Young man, warm yourself before the hearths of scholars, but see that you are not burnt. For when they bite, it is the bite of a fox. And when they sting, it is the sting of a scorpion.
I will remember, Rabbi Eliezer.
And also remember to be careful about the respect due to your colleagues as about the respect due to yourself. And do not permit yourself to become easily provoked to anger.
The pages of the Talmud continue to turn, my friend, and the ragged edges of life are smoothed. The passions, the animosities, the days of turbulence are over. The controversy of the stove has subsided. The old rabbi is now near death. It is then that the scholars of Yavne come to pay him a visit. But because of the ban, they stand some feet away from him. I'm glad to see that you also will stay for the death scene.
I see you there, rabbis of Yavne.
Good day, Eliezer.
Why have you come? To hear a dying man repent of his wrong so you can gloat when I'm dead and say how right you were?
No, Eliezer. We have come to study Torah.
But why have you not come until now?
We must apologize, but our affairs have kept us away.
It used to be not this way. Once I was a great teacher in Israel, and many of you were my disciples. Those are my memories. Some pleasant, many painful.
Eliezer, do you remember when we were young men, how we secretly carried our teacher Yochanan ben Zakkai out of Jerusalem before the Romans came?
Yes. For we believed with the revered Hillel that Rabban Yochanan was the father of wisdom and the father of coming generations.
And so he will be. For it was his vision which saw that in spite of national disaster and the destruction of the temple, the study of Torah must continue. The spirit will conquer the sword.
When we mourn the loss of the temple, he would quote to us Hosea. The Lord desires loving kindness and not sacrifices.
And by teaching Torah to mankind, Rabban Yochanan believed, and he made it our dream also, that a day would come when men would be liberated from falsehood and hate.
Now that death is near, I again hear the words of our beloved teacher, cautioning us kindly. If you have learned much Torah, he said, ascribe no special merit to yourself, for that is the true function of your being.
The dialogue is over between Eliezer and us. He is dead. It is fitting that we dissolve the ban.
The story ends, my friend. And I look behind me, and I'm pleased to see that you are still there. Do you agree with me now? Oftentimes when the rabbis of the Talmud discuss the law of a ball, a shoemaker's last, an amulet, a leather bag containing pearls, a small weight, or even a stove, something very special and telling about the human situation, your life and mine, was said.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Abraham J. Karp, spiritual leader of Temple Bethel in Rochester, New York. Rabbi Karp.
In true Talmudic fashion, we begin with a question. What is the difference between a stove and a Talmudic stove? A plain, ordinary, everyday stove gives heat to warm man. The Talmudic stove gives us the light of insight and understanding to illumine and uplift our lives. We have heard a disputation about the law and authority in the law. It is the greatness and worth of the discussion that each of us received instruction from it in accordance with our understanding, with our needs, and with our passions. To me, the incident we relived is an inspiring portrayal of man's sober and dedicated assumption of responsibility. Minds and hearts are ours, said the rabbis, gifts of our Creator, blessed be He. A law has been given to man, and we have been charged with the responsibility to interpret and apply the law in the life of man according to the knowledge of our minds and the understanding of our hearts. To preserve and establish the law is our duty to man before God. And nothing in this world, or even beyond this world, will swerve us from the performance of our duty and the execution of our responsibility as we see it to do and to establish. The light of wisdom glows from the Talmudic stove and from the great repository of the fruits of mind and heart, which gave the stove its name, and inspiration and challenge too. To reject excuse and to resist alibi, to stand up to man and defy heaven, as it were, and to accept our responsibility and perform our duty to do the right as God's gift of mind and heart direct us to see it.
Thank you, Rabbi Karp. Our eternal light drama today, The Talmudic Stove, was written by Erwin Gonshack. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Leon Janney as Eliezer, Santos Ortega as Gamaliel, and Roger DeCoven as Joshua. Others in the cast were Maurice Tarplin and Martin Newman. The narrator was Norman Rose. This is Vic Roby. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.